Sally.
Good, thanks. Just briefly, just a little bit of quiet for focus, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you. We're made it all the way to five, huh? But this is big stuff, too. This is going to be hard. Twelve Traditions, long form. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Big stuff, enough for this group to take on as the most important thing for you to consider. A spiritual entity. I think that gets lost in the shuffle way too often. So I guess the harvest dance isn't the most important thing. The AA harvest dance. AA doesn't have dances or golf scrambles or I'm looking for my little cartoony one too to read the short form, but I think that there would be just huge amounts of participation about the. Oh, here's that the rise and fall of a home group, John. I'll leave that because you guys may want to make some copies of that just to read. Because I don't think that we even really adequately address that whole business of one group. But that's my own personal feeling, and is that you join a home group, and that's where you attend the business meetings. And if you say you're a member of the group, then you attend the business meetings and you vote, and that's where that distinguishes you, that group, from the other places where you go to just pick up a meeting here and there. There would be so much, I know, conversation and about our fifth tradition that I don't even know where to start. Do you want to have, or would you like, if I can go like just by reading through and making little brief comments till like quarter till, then we can pick out whatever comes out of the basket. Would that be okay? Because I'm the one that's causing the problem. I'm off in the weeds more than I'm on target. So, but things remind me of stuff. Well, where are the questions on that? A little blue paper. Well, geez, I've even got all my stuff all messed up here now, too. Okay, tradition six is an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And, geez, I think that's clear. We could blow this thing, and money is a biggie. And I'm always touched by Bill's reporting on how roads he almost went down, and then his group talked him out of it. Because you know he was a hustler, he was a promoter, and he really was tempted in so many ways. I like the one about they wanted to put his face on Time magazine on the cover, and he really wrestled with it, and I can believe that he did, and decided that they could put Alcoholics Anonymous on the cover, and he would be supportive of that, but not him, not his face. He didn't want to take ownership or anything like that. But imagine all of the times that he was tempted to, you know, with big money offers and stuff. Charlie Towns wanted him to run a portion of Towns Hospital, and it made sense. And then they said, no, that's where he started to talk about the good being the enemy of the best. And so many ways that we could, there's a jillion ways that we could blow it, we could lose this thing. Some people say, oh no, God will take care of AA. I think God will take care of drunks. If we don't do our job, he'll take his business elsewhere. If we don't live up to what we've been given, the opportunity to carry this message of recovery to the suffering alcoholic, then I think that God will do business with somebody who does. I don't think that if we're disrespectful and we screw up AA, that he's going to keep taking good care of us. There I go again. Tradition 7, biggie. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And that's the short form. And the long form. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I didn't read the long form of the sixth tradition, and I need to. It's a long, long form. This is the sixth tradition. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred. But hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never to go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. And here's a really great example of how sometimes the long form already answers the questions that you might have if you only read the short form, because I think that's just crystal clear. And then the seventh tradition. Our AA experience has taught us that the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies. That acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserve to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. And boy, is that wise. We've had major offers, donations at the Central Service office I know of. And the interesting point for me about that is it was a bequest from a non-AA in his will to leave money to Alcoholics Anonymous because his brother got sober in AA, and he wanted to dump a lot of money on it, on the central office. So they had a business meeting and talked about it, and the course that the meeting took was, how can we get around this? You know? Like, could we buy the building and then rent it to AA for a pittance or, you know, whatever? And then one guy spoke up and he said, geez, it seems to me like we're looking for loopholes. And I don't think that's the best way to, for AA to do business. And that's exactly what it was. And that's exactly what occurs to me first, is how can I get around this? You know, like, like, this is what they're saying, but we could work it out, you know. but it's real, it's that important to do things the right way for the right reason and not be looking for loopholes, because AA is more important than that. AA deserves my best behavior, not my typical behavior. So, but money is a tough one. It really is. And property and prestige and all that. So, aren't these traditions thrilling, though? I mean, they really do cover most everything. The eighth tradition, long form. Oh, and you know what else I would be remiss if I didn't mention is that an awful lot of things are taken care of by, oops, not that one. This is, there is a pamphlet. Self-supporting, self-support, money in AA. It really does address so many of the problems that we come up against. And I heartily recommend that. In fact, that's one that's free. It's a green pamphlet with the same appearance as all of the ones on the rack. But it's called Self-Support. And the subtitle is Where Money and Spirituality Do Mix is in the Hat. You know, because there's an awful lot of complaints too about cheesy folks, you know, this is judgmental, but somebody who drives up in a nice car with a mocha frappuccino venti, whatever, you know, that costs about $8, you know, and they say, and everything I have is because of AA, and they throw in 50 cents. But I keep track of them, too. I do. it's a shame. But so it works both ways. We have to be very careful of large amounts of money that carry some kind of strings. You know, that's where we got to be careful. And the General Service Office always has to watch out for that, because if there's somebody who's buying tons and tons of our literature and we don't monitor that carefully, then they could come to GSO and say, you know, we really account for a large amount of your budget. We'd like you to change this in the book, or get rid of that part. We don't like that part. Anything that gives anybody the opportunity to monkey with our stuff is absolutely has to be avoided. And, you know, the guy that pays the piper calls the tune. We can't have outsiders calling the tune. And we have to guard our message. So we have to be careful who we accept money from. But then also, where are we going to get the money to do the things that we need to do? So that's up to us. And we were talking about this on the way over. If you tell people what the purpose is at a business meeting, the money will be there. You know, you need some more books for the prison or whatever. And that's only respectful. Not just dig deep, but tell people why we're asking that. You pay attention to your contributions this month or something. We got this coming up, or we got that coming up. Just tell people, and the money will show up. Bill always said that if it's an important service, if we need something that is important for service, not having the money is not an excuse for not doing it. We'll get the money if it's really a service that's necessary or required. But on the other hand of that is what they're talking about is large amounts of money building up for no stated AA purpose. There's coffee cans all over this country that are filled with dollar bills, and they're just sitting there. We need to keep the money moving in AA, too. Send it on to the district. Send it on to the area. Send it on to the central service office. Send it on to GSO that it can do work, not just sit around for, you know, that's just waiting for that treasury to go south. And so, among other bad things, you know. So money is important to AA. It's not the be-all, end-all. But it's the way we vote, too. If an entity is not doing what we ask them to do, we don't contribute to them. That's our responsibility. That's the power of the purse. If an intergroup is having car washes or yard sales to generate money, the groups have got to say, we don't give you the right to authorize to generate your own funds. You need to be dependent on us, the groups, because you need to serve us. And if you have a way of generating your own funds, you can start doing whatever you want to do, and that's not healthy. So our group is not going to support you. Please discuss it at the next business meeting, because none of those other entities really have the right to generate their own funds. The General Service Office does not have a right to generate its own funds, because then they could do whatever they want to do. It's right for them to be dependent on contributions so that we hold the power over them. The groups always have to be in control. And that's how we do it, is by managing our money. Seven. The eighth tradition, short form. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And then the long form, which really, I think, explains a lot. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fee or higher. But we may employ alcoholics where they're going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. In my experience, when they say always or never, that's something to pay attention to. That's like the squiggly writing in the big book, you know. And we never pay for 12-step work. And we have an instance like this in Rhode Island. Our central office does pay an office manager. My firmly held belief is that the job of an office manager is to get volunteers and train volunteers so that volunteers answer the telephone. But essentially what they do is abdicate their responsibility. The groups abdicate their responsibility when they attend the central office meetings. And somebody needs to bring up the point of, and I promise I have, you're paying somebody to do 12-step work. Because you're paying this guy, and he's answering the phone and doing 12-step work, as opposed to managing the office that gets volunteers and trains them to do the 12-step work. You know, it's his job to order the literature and all that and have volunteers available at the office and volunteers who answer the phone. Our 12-step work is never to be paid for. and a whole bunch of people got together and they decided that they would start another entity. So that's why Rhode Island is one of the few states where there is a central service office and an intergroup office. The intergroup office said, we should be all volunteer. So they don't pay anybody. So they don't have an office manager. And it's chaos. Who's in charge here? Nobody. But what's really laid out, and there is a, you know, we have the guidelines from the General Service Office for all of the duties and jobs. That's those yellow pamphlets. Do you have those? They usually come with the new group booklet that you get when you register as a new group. Those guidelines are shared experience that would say the best way to do that is that you have a paid manager, maybe two paid workers, and you should pay them a decent salary as well. Don't think that just because they're working for AA that they should work for nothing. You know, for a puny amount, if they are somebody who brings skills to the job, they need to be paid right for it. So you can have paid workers, but as far as the 12-step work goes and the volunteer stuff, then it's never a 12-step work is just never to be paid for. And I think they're very clear about what a professional is, the two-hatters, and that's a tough area, but. But there's ways to do it the right way. Okay. 9. This is another one where I think that people extract just pieces of this tradition to quote. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 9, each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area, their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. And the part that I always think is misquoted is AA as such ought never be organized. People say AA should not be organized. But I think what they're saying, AA as such, means we shouldn't be organized like General Motors is organized. You know, we don't have that kind of a hierarchy or stuff like that. But yeah, we got to be organized to work effectively. And I think that they're real clear about how AA gets organized. So if you got any questions about that, I guess put them in the basket. Tradition 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And the long form reads, no AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues. particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. Geez, that's really clear. For the good of AA. That's why we don't get into lawsuits. We don't get involved in stuff that are going to make AA look bad. And that's why we have to work stuff out with people, among ourselves, rather than have big flashy disagreements and things. And why I can't wear a campaign stuff to my home group or to a meeting. I don't ever want to, suppose, and religion, but I don't want to turn anybody off because their views differ from mine. AA is too important for him and for me. So I don't want to start a controversy in my home group. You know, that's just really an important place where I need to be respectful. Yes, sir.
Talked about this earlier, but we have these speakers meetings on Saturday night, and everybody always refers to non-alcoholic drugs as outside issues, and then they apologize and say, well, that's part of my story, you know, blah, blah, blah. Is that necessary in your opinion? I mean, if your story, you know, I think a lot of people start drinking and become alcoholics, and they, you know, just add other stuff in, and, you know, maybe at the end they're focused on one thing or another, but I think that's still alcoholism, don't you? Or do you feel different?
If I understand what you're saying, Connecticut Convention a couple of years ago had a guy with the worst drug story I've ever heard. And this was at their state convention. You got 1,200 people in that room, and you got one shot at them for a year. If you just have a drug story, you've missed the boat. You haven't been able to address the alcoholics who came there and bought a registration. Some people walked out. I thanked the guy for coming because I was taught that I always have to thank the speaker. My complaint was with the committee. They had a whole year to select the speakers for that convention. They could listen to tapes, and yet they invited that guy. It wasn't his fault. That's what he does. He gets a lot of attention for that. And, you know, the addicts are a lot flashier than plain old juice heads. You know? And they would really prefer to not only be using but dealing, and all, you know, there's a little panache. You know? So they would prefer to talk about their drug history, but not in an AA meeting. And can they mention it as part of their story? Yeah, they really can, and there's a way to do that without getting into dirty needles or, you know, whatever. You know, you don't have to, you know, make a career out of the whole drug thing. But you have a right to mention, and I used other substances or whatever. I hear people all the time making reference so that I know what they're talking about. I get it. And that's their story. But if they're alcoholics, I just really want to hear the story of how alcohol affected them and how they got relief from that. How about their recovery? What happened that turned them around? And that. So if I'm the secretary of a group that invites speakers, I think I have a responsibility to make sure that I don't ask somebody to come to my group and talk that has a big fat drug history and insists on using it. And likewise, if I'm on the committee for a roundup or any kind of an AA event, I really want to take time and energy to get speakers that I really can pretty much expect are going to deliver a message of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. And does that?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And the long form reads, Our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not to be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. And the press has been very generous with Alcoholics Anonymous in general for years. I think that they've treated us very well and respectfully and fairly. as with so many things that get messed up, at first you want to say, people are harming AA. But you know what? It's us. We're the problem, or we can be the problem, or not the problem, depending on how we take care and handle things in our business meetings. But an awful lot of the problems are us. There's going to be with the internet. You know, the whole social networking thing is opening up. It's not insurmountable, but there's going to be more problems before it gets resolved. But it's not the end of the world. I think the last one was probably the insurance companies. You know, everybody was saying, insurance is going to ruin AA because they're paying for all these rehabs and all that. And it was a big deal. And when we talked about it, what made sense to me was somebody said, hey, instead of talking about the insurance companies today, why don't we just focus on how we can better carry our message? And I think it's got to be the same way with policing the internet or anything else. We got to focus on what we can do to protect the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous, and not get siphoned off and getting bogged down in the problem du jour. You know, because after we get this one settled, there'll be another one down the pike later. We just simply need to focus on what we can do, and we do it better than anybody else in recorded history. We can be of help to active alcoholics to recover. And if we focus on that, it doesn't mean ignore them, but it means don't get off in, you know, like we do, like I do, God knows. But I think that that's one of the next big things, next big hurdles is all of the social networking on the electronic media. And then there's continued debate about whether a person's anonymity is in effect after he dies. Posthumous anonymity. There's always an argument about that. I think that the whole thing resolves to I have a right to identify myself as an alcoholic in recovery, or however else I want to say it. I don't have a right to talk about you. I don't have a right to talk about somebody in my group that died by his full name. Because his family is still living. Maybe they don't want it known. That's their right. And so I just think that we have to be careful and not cavalier or reckless or careless. Anonymity, and that's the next thing, is just... it's a precious commodity. There's more to anonymity than not using my name. I want you to be sure to know that I think that there's way more to it than that. But that is part of it. And if somebody new does come in and hears us knocking around full names and movie stars and all that kind of stuff, he's got to be sitting there saying, geez, are they going to talk about me? And maybe it's very important to him. And doctors and lawyers, most especially, when they very first come in, most of them ultimately are able to resolve that for themselves. But an awful lot of people are very, very touchy about a break that wasn't their fault occurring in a small town or something like that. So we just got to wake up and I mean, so many of these things, we do have instructions and directions. We just don't pay careful enough attention to them. You know what? They are historical figures. And it's still touchy. But they were very real people, historically, to non-AAs as well. And I think that that makes them a little bit of an exception. But also, so much occurred before the traditions were written, and early on when the traditions began, that people had misunderstandings, and it was just broad, open knowledge who Bill Wilson was and who Lois Wilson was in reality, you know, in the news, and Dr. Bob Smith. You know, people knew. So, I mean, it's kind of closing the barn door now when they're well known, almost in the public domain, so to speak. But in general, we just have to pay more attention. But yeah, there's breaks all over the place. But if, you know, let it begin with me and let it begin with my home group, that we be just mindful and considerate. And we're better off the closer we can stick to anonymity. And tradition 12 is, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our traditions. The spiritual foundation, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I'll read the long form. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And that's more than poetry, isn't it? It's beautiful, and this is very touching, but really, practically, we got to wake up about all of the playing fast and loose with anonymity. It's because we're not invisible, you know? I think that we can play it too close with anonymity, too. You know, being cutesy with my name. I think that in AA, I use my whole name. Outside of AA, I don't, because I don't connect my name with being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can say I'm in recovery, or whatever else I want to say, if I just want to communicate with somebody that I think might need this information. I have good information for them if they're if they're in trouble, but it's I don't throw my name around either. I had that at work. I worked in a medical capacity, and that's touchy all the time, you know. Even in my bosses, we expect understanding from the medical profession in general, but a lot of them don't get it. They just don't realize what AA is or what AA does. And they still have an idea that an alcoholic has on a dirty trench coat and a brown bag. And I recognized that, and I knew that I would be putting myself at a disadvantage to identify as an alcoholic in some situations. So I didn't bring it up. Why go looking for trouble? When I felt moved to disclose my membership, I went ahead and did it. And sometimes I got burned with that as well. That's okay. I can live with that. But I don't go looking for trouble. But if there's a reason to identify, I think the spiritual part of that is that I don't try and take credit You know, like I have not had an original idea in well over 40 years now. Everything I know, I picked up in AA. I learned it here. And if I start trying to act like I have all the answers or I know everything, then I'm not in a good space and taking credit for things. Or I don't even tell people, other people, who I sponsor. I don't take credit for their sobriety. If they disclose, that's up to them. But I don't try and try and elevate my position in AA by telling you some of the really nice people that I sponsor. You know, but there's lots of different ways of things like that we can get into, and what a good job I do, or I have so much responsibility, and boy, I fixed this and I did that. I think that there's a price to be paid. You know, there's a little bit of instant gratification, but it turns to ashes in your mouth if you're trying to take credit for AA. So, anybody want to jump in on anonymity? There is also a whole brochure on our policies and... now I just found the self-support while I'm looking for it. But there is a really, really good one. This is Seventh Tradition Self-Support. Oh, John, did you want to pass the basket while we've flung through that one? But there also is Understanding Anonymity.
Can I just make a little announcement real quick?
Sure.
Just in line with what we were talking about earlier at the Seventh Tradition, we have a little announcement at our group that we like to make, that we don't think a dollar in the basket is really in the spirit of self-support anymore. And we urge our fellow A's to consider to put the price of a cocktail in the basket wherever you go to meetings for a day of sobriety. We don't want to tell anybody what to do, but that's what we urge our fellow A's to consider thinking about. And if you like what you heard today, it takes real money to do these kind of workshops and fly your speaker in and, you know, make sure you put them up and
yes,
feed them and all that
very
kind of stuff.
Well.
So please help us to do this in the future.
Be great. And do we have basket stuff, best questions from the...
Let's see if there's any more back there. We're at the end now, right? So people just want to ask questions from the floor.
Mary Jane, can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
You know how you were talking about the conflicts of privilege?
Yeah.
For groups like ours that do, you know, outreach, centers are now getting into the prisons, and it's come up with every group I've ever been involved in, actually, is trying to get the literature in the new person's hands as you're taking, you know, literature in and trying to, especially like the little big ones, the other organizations, other printers that have like the little red ones. If you buy 100 of them, it costs you $1, a little under, versus buying 100 of the small big ones, it's going to cost you 3 times that. In general, our group has been very much, we're going with conference approved. If it ain't blue, we don't want it, basically, or whatever. But I just wonder if you had any experience with that, because I know it's all coming from a place of wanting to get the literature in our hands, and not wanting to break the group's bank with it, and, you know what I mean, to give them something to read,
sure,
inmates, and this kind of thing. I mean, not having available at the home group for sale, but in an effort to get the literature out there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kath. That's a really important thing. There are cheap little big books out there. And wouldn't it be a good idea if we bought tons of those and made good use of our money? I don't think so. And the reason is we lose our control over what goes into that book as soon as we do that. That publisher, which is not AA World Services, Inc., can change things. And I think that we are really the guardians, and it is our responsibility to keep AA intact. And absolutely, I mean, I don't want an an imperfect big book. I don't want something that somebody has had the opportunity to booger around with. And maybe this time they're only going to make a little punctuation thing. But once you break the integrity of a published work, then you can start doing all kinds of stuff. We don't even like this story. Let's not put that one in. In addition to the fact that AA depends on the income from selling big books, when I served in New York, we referred to the big book as the engine that drove the train. All of our other services are not totally dependent on our literature for financing, but nearly half. Contributions represent half of the money that we have for group services, for translating big books, for doing all of the work that AAWS does. But the difference is made up by selling literature. We don't make a huge profit, but we do make some money on every big book and every piece of General Service Conference approved literature that AAWS sends out. It's a big source of revenue. If it weren't a big source of revenue, those companies wouldn't bother doing it. And here again, who's doing all of this? It's us. Those are AA members that are putting themselves in competition for profits with Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we support them, we're voting with our money. We're supporting them. We're making them get stronger and they'll do more stuff. And if we don't, they go out of business. A couple of them have already gone out of business since I've been here. John?
Related to that same point, isn't there kind of a conflict and some debate about literature sales being a source of, service, funding? And
yes, there is.
As opposed to pure contributions.
This is true. And that our aim is to be fully self-supporting by voluntary contributions. On the other hand, Bill was always in favor of using the money from the sale of our literature because our literature is sold to members of Alcoholics Anonymous, in addition to some other considerations that say that AA now owns the copyrights and that there should be some profit made, and that brings in, that generates income that we can use for AA purposes. I personally am not offended that the money generated by the sale of General Service Conference approved literature is used for AA services. But other people take issue with that. It's worth talking about. I don't want it all to be run by, because AAs will just sit back and say, they're selling books. They got enough money. And it's a big deal anymore, Our budget's $12 million a year. It's not a mom and pop outfit anymore. We have to be careful, but there's no hard and fast, John, but that it's good to talk about. And our aim should be that we are essentially self-supporting through the voluntary contributions. But I'm really not for supporting non-AA entities. Even though, and I used to really wrestle with that myself, gee, we could get a lot more books in people's hands. But also, Bill was not even in favor of giving out free books. He did some of it. But we don't tend to value something that somebody gave us for free.
That's right.
And some groups even announce, if you would like to buy a big book and don't have the money right now, we'll make generous terms with you. 50 cents a week is okay. But you will value it more if you've had to do something to get it. Now, in a prison, they don't have money. And so we do. We bring in big books. And we bring in some of the other General Service Conference approved literature there because they don't have the opportunity to shop, and we want the books in there. So, but for halfway houses or other places like that, we're pretty cheesy with them. You know, we don't spread them around like, we don't act as though they don't have value. Because it's better if they believe that this is not all that easy to come by. So we don't throw them around. And
I have a quick literature question. Some of us go to a retreat that the theme is literature before the big book.
Uh-huh.
And we discuss the book of James and the Bible, and we discuss the Fox Sermon on the Mount and those things. Is that something that's legitimate to talk about around an AA meeting that we're, invite people to that retreat?
If you're clear about what you do, then I think that is information that would be of interest to AA members. But I would be very careful about publicizing that event as being something that you would bring a new guy to or something like that. I would not bring a new guy to it. I think it's very interesting. I think it's very worthwhile. But I think you got to be very clear and make sure that people don't go expecting a big book retreat or something like that. Just is that because, like I say, those things are not General Service Conference disapproved. But I wouldn't have them for sale at my group, and I don't want them in the AA meeting because it's just confusing. There's enough for a new guy to get introduced to our literature, But somebody who's been around for a while and chooses to do some other things like that, then you can. That would be my opinion. I'm sure that there's plenty of people who wouldn't agree with that either, but they ain't here.
You're probably wrong.
Here's one question is, what can be done about crosstalk in a group? We're bordering on policing, but also it's really, really annoying and distracting, isn't it? And it's always the same guys. Sure. If now Fred has made his comment on the reading or the topic for tonight, and we're going to go around the room. And then somebody, the next person in line is the next guy who gets to make his comment. And sometimes when they start or they say something that says, oh, I had a tough time today, I got a flat, whatever, But then somebody across the room will say, oh, I know that happened to me last week too, or fixing people across the table, and that just isn't the way we operate here. It's distracting. Here again, I think disrespectful. This person has just said, "I don't need," like when somebody says, "Oh, good comment," or "Gee, I don't need for my comments to be evaluated," it's not your turn. Is crosstalk? I think. Is there any other definitions? Yeah.
My name is Anne. I'm calling.
Hey, Anne.
Is when somebody shares something, and rather than sharing my own experience, strength, and hope, I talk at the person. Mm-hmm. They say, I'm having a hard time with this, and I go, well, if you do this, this, and this, regardless of where I am in the meeting, not necessarily, not always interrupting, although that drives me crazy too, but some of it is the way I deliver things mm-hmm. at the person rather than sharing my own experience, strength, and hope. And that really drives me crazy. As an alcoholic, you can't stand to be told what to do when somebody,
Wait, let me tell you what you need to do.
Well, Well, it's a very tough thing because most often what we decide is the remedy for that is we'll put it in the announcements. There is no crosstalk at this group. Well, pretty soon the announcements get longer and longer and longer, and where you can put your cigarettes and where you can park and where you know, and on and on and on. And announcements don't always address everything. Sometimes it's a matter of sponsorship once again. And I think that that's the important part. It can come up at a group business meeting if it's getting out of hand, and then we got to discuss what's the best way to deal with this. Because we're not in the business of fixing each other. We do have experience to share, but it needs to be addressed. But here again, I think it's business meetings and sponsorship and those kind of things. If you want to put them in the announcements, okay, but sometimes the announcements really get crazy.
Is there some place only an alcoholic? Is there some place in our literature that sort of talks about either the definition of crosstalk or I was told that kind of defines the treatment center.
Not that I know of in our literature. Yeah. Does anybody know? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying that sometimes people refer to crosstalk as when you're having an actual meeting and somebody is sharing, and you can hear somebody behind you talking too.
Sometimes
they do it. Yeah. That's just rude. Yeah. I mean, if they want to share, why don't they wait for the other person to finish? When they have a meeting behind you.
Yeah.
So what do you, I think that's the responsibility of the chairperson.
I do too.
So some people say, well, you know, whatever happens in the meeting is supposed to happen because God's there or whatever, but still, you know, somebody is trying to save your life in the meeting and somebody else is spilling the medicine.
I think that the chairperson can take care of a lot of that extraneous kind of stuff and relieve us all to get back to the meeting and sponsors as well. But, yeah, they need to be dealt with. But you don't want to pass a rule is the other problem, because we really don't want to get top-heavy with rules, too, so that everything is legislated. And that just doesn't work very well with us.
I'm new, and I don't want to cause any controversy. Or I'm really love you guys, but in our group, there's announcements always. If you have less than 90 days sobriety, you sit back, relax, and listen. And that's cool and everything, and I totally take that advice. And I haven't always shared in our group. But do you think? I mean, is that? I don't know. Sometimes I just have something on my heart that, you know, related to the subject or what, you know, somebody else has said, but I keep my mouth shut because they tell me to. Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, bring it up at the business meeting.
Okay. I thought about that. Right now.
Yeah. Because the group is autonomous, and that's a product of making rules, like I know of a group near me where you're not allowed to make any comment if you have not been brought through the steps by a sponsor in that group. Yes. That's sounding very attractive to someone. Yeah. So I personally don't, you know, I wouldn't belong to the group, actually. No, so, but try all the things that the little avenues that we have, which is, you know, just talking to some other folks to see if they can help straighten some of that stuff out. But business meetings, I think, here again, it the first time you bring it up, this is how we do it, you know, and they have a good reason for it and all that. But the next time you bring it, maybe some people will talk about it and decide that having a rule that requires a certain amount of time or stuff isn't necessarily in their best interest. I don't know,
I have each following, so I don't have a problem with that. I'm just wondering, you know, about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I did share, and it was awesome, so I just
for me, and so I was just wondering about that, but I'll keep quiet for a couple more minutes.
but really, it doesn't hurt a bit to talk to some other people, and they may be standing around thinking that they're the only ones that feel that way, and how it affects you and what you feel about it, and then they'll talk to some more of their friends, and pretty soon it will get talked about at a business meeting, and it won't get fixed, but maybe in a month or 2 months later you got a better chance at it. So I don't know that there's any other money. My group does not I don't see any other written questions, John.
That's a seventh tradition question.
Okay. That's just...
You can put that off. I don't remember if we came
back
or not.
The one on the seventh tradition says, how can we get people to understand the need for more than a dollar? One of the ways is to write a grapevine article, and then you generate discussion all across the country. The following month, there'll be replies back and forth, and other people are reading them and thinking about it. I think that what you do, I wouldn't do it, mostly because I don't want to talk about the price of a drink. But it's not a bad way, and I don't think it is. But there's lots of ways. There was a guy who was an editor of the Grapevine years back. His name was Al S., and he wrote a number of scathing articles addressed to cheapskates and all that, but saying how people just were not supporting the groups and the needs that we have. Because it's not okay to get by with cheesy rent payments and stuff, and allowing, essentially we're accepting a contribution from a non-AA entity if we pay $10 a month for rent. And so we just need to bring it up and talk about it. But how can you make people? You can just share your own experiences that I feel like more of a member if I'm a contributing member through my own voluntary contributions. But Grapevine, I think, is a good one.
One of the things I've been doing, I've taken it from the steering committee and just taking a few minutes at the meeting, you know, or at my home group, maybe even some of the others. Because some people actually don't know what a home group is. They don't know where the money goes. And they don't know what the steering committee is. They don't, you know, and I know I didn't want to feel stupid, so I didn't ask. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we just took a few minutes to explain to them why we have a central office and why we need a central office for the books and the phone and,
sure,
and all that. So that seemed to kind of make the fact that, you know, some of it's in the red and it's never in the black like this.
Yep. Just those kind of reports and conversations are helpful. But I think that's the right way also to communicate with the group what the money is used for. That's big if they get the idea of what all we're expecting a dollar to do. You know, we realize that that's just not reasonable. And anything, any kind of conversation helps, just stir it up.
So when you first came in, were people putting a dollar in a basket?
No.
Lies.
No. No. They
weren't. They've been telling us people were putting a dollar in the beginning. I'm just kidding.
Well, I wasn't here at the beginning. No, they really were not. In fact, a lot of groups had the message like, if you can contribute more, put it in, but if you need it bad, you can take some out. You don't hear that around anymore either, you know. That's like, take what you need or take what you... take what you need and leave the rest or something. My dad came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1950, and he said we weren't saying that then because I'd have taken an overcoat. You know, he needed one. So, But I think it's a privilege to contribute. I'm a member. I get to contribute. We don't take money from non-AAs. So.
Thanks so much, Mary.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we're just going to go ahead and close it up. We'll circle up and say the Lord's Prayer.